The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
We must reach the church before the ceremony is done, and it has recruited another soldier to his army of the plague.
Plague?
Okashnik bring disease. He bring plague. He bring the Black Death. Only those who bear his mark are immune to it. They are his beasts.
The bayous of Louisiana, steeped in magic and the supernatural, are the new epicenter of a dark, age-old evil. Here, the horrors of a long-lost world are being resurrected into a living nightmare, unleashing a pestilence that may destroy hybrid and human alike.
A virulent disease is sweeping through my territories. If it spreads outward with our diminished autoimmune systems and this treatment facility in ruins, the Nine Barons will perish. We of the hybrid dynasty are doomed if we do not seek outside aid. If necessary, we must circumvent the oligarchy altogether and find other allies.
It's the Black Death. Sure enough.
You've got the plague.
All of us have it. But it won't kill us.
Why not?
Okashnik kissed us. Immunized us.
You want to explain me? Is that it? And therefore diminish what I am? Or what you fear me to be?
And what is that?
A vampire.
He is Okashnik, a creature who has never died. He woos all the darkness within the human soul like a lover. He is the king of the shadowy hordes that revel among the tombs of the ancient dead when night veils the swamps and the rats crawl among the offal. Those he kisses live forevermore in the darkness of the spirit.
Kiss me and live forever.
Kane, Grant, and Bridget Baptiste join with a voodoo priestess to battle primordial fear and destroy one of the most ancient of evils in Outlanders number 13, Shadow Scourge. Now in Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 2, Sporting Chance, Part 2. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Lily Beacon, Terrence Azelford, Andy Van Dorn, Andy Clemens, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Ariane Parker, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Elizabeth Demery, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Karen Carbone, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Baker, Peter Stray, James Konacek, and Mort Shelby.
Previously in Serrano Legacy, Book 2, Sporting Chance. After the young people survive the almost deadly incident on Cerealis, Lady Cecilia de Marctos is asked to ferry Prince Gerald back to his home planet on her yacht. But while en route, Cecilia's nephew Ronnie, makes a troubling discovery.
I think something's wrong. If I didn't know it was Gerald, I wouldn't believe it was the same person.
Better not tell anyone. It's dangerous knowledge.
But I must. He's the only surviving prince.
Captain Serrano!
What's wrong? Is your aunt...
Aunt Cecilia's in a coma. They don't know if she'll come out of it. She just fell down. She's had a massive stroke.
You know what they're saying about you. Berenice is hinting that you did something to cause the stroke.
Did Ronnie tell you about the will? Apparently she changed her will almost as soon as she arrived, and she left me, a substantial legacy. The yacht. If you can visit Lady Cecilia without arousing suspicions, perhaps you can ascertain if she really is brain damaged or not.
Oh, my.
It is a very delicate matter, possibly quite dangerous. I would not consider asking you were it not for your military background, your proven courage, and your discretion.
You want me to steal the yacht out from under the noses of the family, against all law and regulation, and go to Navarne and take the prince from there to the Guerny Republic to attempt a treatment you know nothing about?
This is the craziest idea I've ever heard. You want to take a sick, paralyzed old lady up in a hot air balloon?
Brunn crouched as the burner roared and pulled the blanket she'd brought along over Cecilia's crumpled form. Finally, it always seemed to take too long, the balloon rose with a jerk and the basket hung straight beneath it. Brunn looked down at someone who had had to dive away from the basket on the terrace behind another unit.
Sorry! Bad currents!
She watched ahead. She could continue to ascend between that balloon and the other, and there was just room to use the directional thruster as well. Carefully, she set the thruster controls and pumped the burner. The idea had been to rise directly above Cecilia's unit in hopes of not triggering any alarms when her monitor transmitters went out of range, and then catch a strong wind home. But the surface breeze, twisting between the units and deflected as well by so many jostling balloons, didn't cooperate. She was already more than 30 meters from the room where Cecilia's bed had been. She needed to gain altitude and start running now. Her balloon rose. She felt the pressure in her boots. Now she could see over the last row of units. Was that Ronnie, walking toward the administration building? Someone had caught a basket in a tree. That balloon, deflating, draped itself over the tree like a discarded party dress. A vast green and silver surface blocked her view as it slid by, someone else's balloon. Out the other side, she saw a yellow striped with light blue. Above, her own balloon blocked her view. She had to hope that she didn't bump into someone from below. Now she was higher than most of the others, than anyone near. Behind and below, balloons obscured her view of the nursing home and its meadow. Most were still aflight, but some were on the ground, surrounded by clumps of people. Ahead and higher were other balloons headed for the shore, but no one was near her. That in itself was dangerous. Anyone might notice the color of a balloon that lifted too suddenly from the nursing home. She looked back again, glad to see that five or six others were rising as fast now. They would block a clear view of hers from the ground. She let go the burner controls. In the sudden silence, she checked her gauges, still rising slowly. She knelt beside the crumpled shape, and as gently as she could, tugged Cecilia to a half-sitting position. The older woman's skin was cold, but she had a strong, regular pulse, and she seemed to be breathing normally. Brunn stuffed a pillow under her head.
Oh, it's Brunn, Lady Cecilia. If you can hear me, we've got you out. Here, smell this.
She tugged out her riding gloves and laid them against Cecilia's face. A nostril fluttered.
That's it. Horse and dog and out of doors. I can't talk more. We're in the air.
She stood up again. Behind, the other balloons were gaining altitude on her. The nursing home was now a blur of dark trees and bright meadow, the units scarcely visible. With any luck, the attendants were still too busy with the chaos to be watching her. From here, at this altitude, the wind would take her straight to the picnic site on the shore. Above, The northbound current of air should be shifting as the front neared, and the southbound current above that would sweep her past the shore, on across the bay to the peninsula where her landing crew waited. She eyed the clouds to the west. The residual sense of where her body was jolted Cecilia into wakefulness. Something was wrong. Pressures in the wrong place, and then she felt herself falling and cramped into a position she could not change. She smelled of fuel gas and something that reminded her of flower baskets without the flowers. And in great gusts, the fresh green smell of spring she had been kept from. Mown grass, oak trees, the bitter tang of willow.
Outside? I'm outside?
It must be the rescue she had prayed for. Overhead, the roaring went on and on. She felt a vague nausea. She heard distant roars, distant voices, and the nearby creaking of baskets again. She felt herself being moved. Then the scent of horse and dog and leather. She wanted to cry for joy. She wished she could move a finger at least. But it was enough just to be out of that place.
There's a chance of surveillance. I can't talk to you all the time, but don't be afraid.
She wasn't afraid now. She wasn't afraid for the first time since the hospital. If the balloon, she had put together her memories of the roaring burner, the smell of gas, the sound of wicker, fell out of the sky and killed them both, she would not be afraid. Not now. She busied her mind with interpretation of the smells that rose from below through the basket. That made it easier to ignore the lurch in her stomach every time the burner roared and the balloon lifted abruptly. At some point, they flew near enough to a bakery to sail through a gust of aroma from new bread, and she tried to guess which city. She recognized the damp rot smell of the shore and wanted desperately to ask which shore, because she began to feel she almost knew where they were.
Heading southeast, out over water and into a little weather. Now that we're farther from shore, I'll put the rain cover on you.
The air smelled rich and clean, heady. She wanted to breathe in and only in forever. She would have been glad to have the rain on her face. Her skin felt starved for the moistness, the changing pressures. The landing, when it came, produced a jolt she could feel. Then the disorienting sensation of being put in all the wrong positions.
Hauled out like a sack of grain. I certainly can't help.
Then a familiar position, flat on her back on some surface, but a vibration rumbling the entire surface. The sense of a spring night still enchanted her. They must be in a vehicle with open windows. She could smell the new grass, a fruit orchard in bloom, all the good smells of open country. No one talked. All she could hear was the wind rush outside. When the vehicle stopped, she felt movement again as her surface, bed, stretcher, was lifted out and rolled somewhere. She sniffed again. This smelled mechanical, almost industrial. Metal, plastics, pavement.
A warehouse? A factory?
Another lift, and she was in a different set of smells. Almost all plastics and fine oils, like a shuttle. A shuttle. She was being shipped off-planet?
If I were making this up, I would figure out some way for my heroine to communicate. It's entirely too boring to lie here, knowing nothing.
Her mind ran through the private shuttle ports and decided they were at Bunny's Crown residence. She felt the firm pressure of acceleration on her body. Wherever they were going, they were on the way. Wherever they were going, it had to be better than where she'd been. Brun laid her hand, smelling of soap, lightly pine-scented, along Cecilia's cheek.
I'm sorry I couldn't talk to you earlier. Those who helped me could not know who you were. They think you're a drunken friend of mine who's going to wake up on station as the result of a festival wager. You're wearing balloonist gear, and it's fortunate you don't look your age. You probably wonder why we took the risk of taking you off-planet right away.
Cecilia hadn't yet wondered that, but now she did. Why not simply hide her somewhere until she recovered?
We expect a solid search effort. We weren't sure if they'd implanted a locator of some kind, and we wanted you out of range of detectors. And they might start checking private shuttle flights after tonight. Luckily, with the festival, there's sure to be more than one private shuttle up. And we don't know how long your recovery will take.
Cecilia caught a concern that it might not come. She wanted to signal, to convince Brunn that she was alive inside, but nothing worked.
We need to get you to good medical care, someone we know is safe and not part of the plot, in a place where we won't be interrupted.
What about Ronnie? Where are we going? What happened to my yacht? And Harris? What kind of medical care? And how does Brunn know the doctors are safe? And how long is it going to take to get my life back?
Cecilia didn't even know exactly how long she'd been like this. Months, at least, because the festival was in spring. But she couldn't remember exactly when it had happened. She did remember that rehabilitation took longer the longer someone was down.
It's going to seem disjointed, I know. First yanking you out of that bed and into the balloon basket, and then into the shuttle, and the transfer at Rockhouse Minor is going to be tricky, too. We've got a priority undock already filed. We couldn't get most of the equipment Dad's neurologist said we needed onto the yacht, so some things will have to wait until we get where we're going.
Cecilia wondered if Brunn knew, or if she had a reason not to say it aloud. She'd already said enough to make any surveillance tapes dangerous.
Actually, we're still arguing about that. The specialists want you at a major medical facility, but Dad says that's too dangerous. Whoever did this is bound to be checking the best-known facilities. He wanted you back home, but your Captain Serrano said the same argument applied to that. She thinks you ought to be somewhere with horses. Somewhere obscure. There's a couple of possibilities. Dad's been checking them out, and once we get to the yacht, I'll have his latest advice. But there's the medical problem.
The medical problem. Whatever had been done to her, whatever might be undone. Cecilia wanted to argue her own case, demand the risks of the top specialists, explain who might have done this and why. But that would have to wait until she could talk, if she ever could. Cecilia surprised herself by falling asleep in the shuttle. Real sleep, deep, comfortable sleep. She felt safe, with Brunn's hand on her cheek, safer than she had felt in months.